Hi, everybody. Welcome to TNT Bombs, a podcast where we discuss issues and topics from a youth perspective. I'm Tejas.
And I'm Tanush. We're both high schoolers from Bellevue, Washington. Today, we'll be speaking on the evolving challenges faced by the American healthcare system, and we'll also explore some forward-facing solutions to these problems.
Usually, inspiration for our podcast comes from a topic that Tanush and I are passionate about, or a topic that we feel doesn't receive nuanced analysis from traditional media. Unfortunately, this time our inspiration for discussing healthcare comes from a darker place. Last year, one of our friends was injured in an accident. As we delved into this lifelong journey he would undergo through the American healthcare system, we learned more about the intricacies of American healthcare. Quite frankly, we got angry at the minimal support the healthcare system will provide to insured Americans.
And before we delve into our episode, just please consider supporting our friend. His name is Yuta. Through his journey, a few weeks after graduating high school, Yuta fractured his C6 vertebrae in his spine. He faces years of rehab, and his family faces hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills, since his insurance company is only going to cover 2 months of care. You can support his family at their GoFundMe page, which you can access at tinyurl.com/supportyuta. That's tinyurl.com/support Y-U-T-A. Thank you.
Okay, so I guess the first thing we really have to delve into is sort of the background of the American healthcare system. Obviously, the American healthcare system is widely criticized across traditional media. And I think we specifically wanted to focus a little bit more on the research and development side of this. I think when we came into this from the angle of looking at Utah's case, we were more focused on not just the traditional, hey, day-to-day doctor's visit, I have a cold, I need a checkup, or even the typical screenings that are really, really important. For example, the typical age checkups of getting cancer screenings or blood work, but more focused on, hey, how does the American health system treat specific conditions, specifically in the extreme cases?
Yeah, and one thing that is definitely important to note is that even though there's lots of criticism for how hard it is to access, specialized care when you're facing these really specific, really advanced problems. It's very important to note that American healthcare has some of the most advanced care that you can find in the world. And a lot of that is powered by the fact that, American universities are essentially world leader in R&D, especially in medical sciences. And so having this really close relationships, especially at academic medical centers, instance, like in our region, Harborview, which is the sort of trauma center for our region where UTA actually got taken care of. They have a partnership with UW Medicine, mm-hmm. with the University of Washington. So being able to transfer all that research into sort of medical approaches that can change lives is very helpful to increasing the quality of care. But nonetheless, there's, these obvious concerns about affordability.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, to touch on the American university aspect, keep in mind that these universities are both public and private, and even though many of these are private universities, a lot of the times that funding still comes from government grants. So at the end of the day, a lot of the research and development done in the American healthcare system is funded by government money. Yeah. But the two main issues we see in the way that the American healthcare system is integrated are issues with accessibility and inequalities. For example, we see this with issues with rural healthcare access. For example, Boise, a major city in the U.S., although much smaller than some other major cities, still doesn't have access to a level one trauma center. And in general, there's a lack of equality and lack of access for poor people. And specifically, we see these gaps in the systems in communities of color and just general impoverished areas where the resources, for example, ambulance times are not as heavy or not as fast as they might be in more wealthy areas where there are greater resources, or urban areas where there is access to closer hospitals.
Yeah, and I think Tejas really touches on sort of the gaps that we have in the system, right? So as Tejas mentioned, we have rural areas. We have, even within urban cities, we have areas that are sort of dependent on safety net or nonprofit hospitals. And oftentimes, these hospitals, they conduct hundreds of millions of dollars in care every year for uninsured patients that just goes uncompensated. And so we see that there's all these gaps in the healthcare system, and those gaps are somewhat filled by these sort of pro bono initiatives. But obviously, these pro bono initiatives are very, they're very easy to break apart, especially under the COVID pandemic. We're seeing lots of increased pressure on these safety net hospitals, and that's causing these hospitals, which already are kind of, you know, running on a thin line, to kind of fall under sometimes, or even just face challenges. And so these gaps are becoming even more exorbitant with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay, so let's zero in on this extreme case again. So obviously a major topic of scrutiny, and quite honestly, rightfully so, are major insurance companies. And how do they cover care? And then what are all the costs that are then passed on to the American consumer? But specifically in extreme cases, the main almost ethical balance we kind of see is how much of an edge case should insurance companies cater to. Unfortunately, in cases like Utah's, there isn't really known medical treatment that can specifically cure his ailment. So in that case, while as much as any family or relative or somebody close to somebody who is in a similar situation would like full coverage, what is the point of view on the insurance company to where they can cater to that issue?
Yeah. And like, for instance, when you look at Utah, we talked about how after 2 months, he probably isn't going to receive much help from his insurance company, but obviously he's going to have all these, you know, probably lifetime long need for healthcare, specifically with the issues caused by his spinal injuries. And so as Tejas touched on, there's a very nuanced sort of issue of how far does the insurance company have to go. And of course, you know, we would love to think that, hopefully, that essentially all of his medical procedures for the rest of time would be covered. But unfortunately, there's also the flip side to that. And the flip side to that is that if insurance companies have to pay for all of the coverage for people who are put in these unfortunate situations, that cost has to be essentially placed, transferred to the rest of the population. Mm. And that means that oftentimes insurance rates might have to go up. And of course, this could be problematic for people who are already struggling to pay with insurance. And so there becomes this sort of problem there.
But Tanush, I think then we delve into like this, the true major ethical dilemma here is like, isn't that the point of insurance, right? As American consumers, we don't purchase insurance for fear of, oh, I will need to pay for the cancer screening. We purchase insurance in fear of, oh, what if I get cancer? How will my family afford treatment? Or what if I have a tragic accident? That is what we purchase insurance for. That's what, like, the definition of insurance is. I know I think about that as insurance is kind of this peace of mind that even in the worst case, I will not have to worry about some of the financial burdens. And quite honestly, by taking this monetary perspective, we kind of rob the American consumer or even the conversation of the ethical boundaries that it deserves.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that sort of perspective is definitely visible if you look to other countries around the world. For instance, in nations like Britain, for example, where you have government subsidized or government run healthcare, you see that, you know, for patients like Utah, he would probably have all of his coverage or all of his care covered for by the government. And so we can see that there's other places in the world where they are able to essentially, you know, provide and cater for all these extreme cases while still providing decent healthcare for the rest of their communities.
So that brings up the chief point about who decides what treatment is necessary and what treatment is worth it. For example, what we talk about in the American system, a lot of the times, quite honestly, it's predicated for the majority of people who cannot afford to pay in these extreme cases, because obviously the average American could not afford hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills. And quite frankly, even some of the top 10% of the wealthiest Americans would not be able to afford this at a rapid rate. Who decides if that treatment is worth it? And in countries like Canada or the UK, where you see free healthcare, the government kind of takes on that cost. And obviously there are financial costs to the rest of the British peoples who then take on that cost of healthcare. Whereas in the US, we kind of see that being predicated by the insurance company. Yeah. And that places another ethical dilemma is, should the insurance companies be the one in charge of determining what treatment is worth it or needed? Or how is it possible that we can shift that responsibility of decision-making perhaps to the family or the patient themselves, who kind of will live with the consequences of that treatment? Or even if you want a more objective, hopefully a more objective decision maker, what about the doctors themselves? How could we push it towards the doctors, so that they can decide, hey, this treatment is worth it or this treatment isn't.
Yeah, and I think what Tej is talking about, right, is who decides, like, what if the treatment is worth it or not. I think that really gets to, again, this, like, institutional issue. As Tej just touched on, in America, most of the time, there's insurance companies who are making these decisions. And, you know, oftentimes, it's not even medical experts. It's not people with MDs who are making these decisions at insurance companies. It's just, you know, corporate people at the insurance companies. I think that really kind of touches on the point that for a lot of these insurance companies, the primary factor is how do we provide enough care that it's still okay legally and it's still okay from a very basic ethical standpoint. But at the end of the day, this, you know, there's a very big concern about money.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these companies are for-profit corporations, or even if they're non-profit corporations, you know, they're still very, very concerned about their revenues and losses. Whereas for the government in some of these countries, it's a lot more about social welfare and social impact, and just, you know, making sure people are the best off. And I think the issue, though, is that right now we're talking about extreme cases. So of course, you know, in Britain and in Canada, we talk about how oftentimes these extreme cases are covered. But the flip side to that is also the less extreme cases. Mm-hmm. For instance, cancer screenings that we talked about earlier. In lots of countries, you know, you could have cancer screenings be done 5 years earlier, and that could probably save a few lives, but the government decides that it's not worth the money. Mm-hmm. So we see that even in the places where the government's deciding if it's worth it or not, you know, sometimes they side with more care, sometimes they side with the cost of
things. Mm-hmm. So I think, Tanush, again, how do we essentially solve this issue in the future? And unfortunately, I think it comes down to this issue of money, because money kind of determines where that ethical trade-offs is, because we realize that there's a really high opportunity cost anytime we invest in a certain medical treatment, and that opportunity cost is where could we be investing that money elsewhere to save lives. So it's not just the corporate greed, but it's also the money has a purpose in terms of we can either take a more utilitarian approach to this and, like, how do we save as many lives as possible, or we can take a very straightforward medical or straightforward moral approach to it in terms of, in each case, how can we save this life.
Yeah, and I think for instance, you know, recently there's been this whole debate about the Alzheimer's drug that and if Medicare should cover it or not. And one of the things that Medicare has been considering is that if you have the because this drug, I forgot exactly, but it costs, you know, well into almost the 100,000 or above 50,000 a year. And so if the government, if Medicare has to pay for this drug, then that means that Medicare can't pay for other treatments for other patients. And so, you know, we see yet again that sort of comes into play, even when the government is the decision maker, not just the insurance company. And so I think, again, you know, what we're seeing is that a lot of these issues are not just, you know, is it the government or is it the insurance provider? It's just more broader issues that permeate healthcare, no matter the system.
Okay, so my perspective is almost, if we can essentially make the rest of the medical industry cheaper, we can then repurpose our money and our resources towards solving these greater, more extreme cases. And by advancing medical research, I think that benefits us in the future, because I think anytime research is done in an extreme field, we're able to see its implications on the research can then help solve other issues that we didn't even see expected. I mean, the classic case is always whenever you look at the U.S. space race, advancements in rocket technology have created advancements that have allowed for the flourishment of the internet, for even like microwave. So like these more advanced technologies kind of cascade down into our everyday lives.
Yeah.
So I think there's a couple of ways. Tanish, do you want to discuss how? Yeah.
So I think obviously, you know, there's, as Tanish mentioned, there's the obvious benefits of research. And I think if we take a more kind of focused, how can research solve the issue that we're looking at, which is affordability in medicine? One pretty, I think, trendy, per se, approach that's getting a lot of attention right now is this idea of applying AI, artificial intelligence, to medicine. And what lots of physicians are seeing is that if we apply artificial intelligence, we can either automate or reduce the amount of time it takes for physicians, therefore reduce the amount of labor it takes for lots of screenings, for lots of, you know, analyzing, especially cancer screenings, for instance, right? We can take AIs have them read this graph that you get from your machine, and then it's much faster. And so obviously, you know, there's definitely lots of potential there for sort of reducing the costs associated with some of this preventative medicine. I think there's another aspect of that, which is that if you can reduce the cost of preventative medicine, right? Going back to the example about cancer screenings, maybe you can have the cancer screenings 5 years earlier as well, mm-hmm. because it's cheaper. And so then overall, you're able to also just, you know, improve people's health.
So a kind of like thought experiment to more practically realize what Tanush is talking about is, many of us have been to a typical doctor's visit and we always like complain about, oh my God, it's a 20-minute visit. Why does it always take the first 20 minutes? I'm just sitting in the doctor's office waiting for somebody to come when there's not really anything happening. But the reality is what happens is doctors, when they might see you for 20 minutes, oftentimes they're caught up for another 20 minutes or even 30, 40 minutes after a visit, taking notes, perhaps placing orders for prescription medicine, calling insurance companies, dealing with what is honestly secretarial work, not critical to utilizing their own skill set, that is then infringing upon potential healthcare being offered. So if we can use AI in those cases, for example, to take notes on medical meetings, to order drugs from yeah. insurance companies or from pharmacies, we can cut down on the amount of time doctors are spending and quite honestly help them
yeah.
And streamline their process with visits, and then that effect can cascade to better treatment
yeah.
for and people overall, and quite honestly, cheaper treatment. And again, that could be used through the use of
through the use of lots of things. And I think one thing that is pretty important to point out is that it's not just doctors who can have their time saved, right? Like a big expense within the American healthcare system, specifically compared to lots of international countries, is the amount of money we spend on administrative work, just because of all the bloat we have with insurance and things. If we can use technology to simplify a lot of this, right? It's not just the doctors who can save time. It's also mm-hmm. the other sort of admin staff within mm-hmm. the hospital system. And so, you know, if you can maybe, you know, if those staff can be freed up to, you know, do other roles, or if you can just reduce the amount of staff you need, you can reduce costs in that way as well. And therefore also helping this sort of goal of reducing healthcare and making it, you know, more easier to have more of it available.
Mm-hmm. So I think, as we're wrapping up, I think one thing to note is at the end of the day, there's no easy solution. There's lots of moral dilemmas, and quite honestly, the moral dilemmas, although there are certain solutions we can implement that would benefit the moral dilemma of money compared to treatment, we can't ever solve this issue because it's going to be fundamental to the system for as long as human scarcity ever exists.
Yeah, and you know, as Sage is saying, it's going to be really difficult to solve these edge cases, to use technology to improve those edge cases. Because, you know, for someone who is in an accident like Utah's, you know, it's going to be very difficult to make it so they won't require lifelong treatment. And so what we're really seeing is that if we use technology, we can reduce the cost of everything else. And by doing so, we can make it more practical for governments and insurance providers to be able to spend money on these extreme cases, and then that way kind of meet their ethical obligation. And that's really what I guess we're kind of trying to get at here, is that you have to make that trade-off, but insofar as we can use technology mm-hmm. to help part of the problem, we can use technology to solve all of the problem.
At the same time, though, I do think we are looking towards a more optimistic future, especially with the advent of new research and technology into the field of medicine. So, I mean, it's not all a bleak scenario, and both of us are excited for the future and how technology will help make medicine better and more efficient for everybody involved, specifically cases like Utah.
Yeah. And that wraps up this episode of the TNT Bombs podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving your review or sharing the podcast with a friend. Our show notes can be viewed at rebrandly.com/TNTBombs. That's rebrand.ly/TNTBombs. You can also reach out to us through our email, tntbombspodcast@gmail.com. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Tanush Yadav and Tejas Agarwal.
Thanks for listening. We hope to catch you all in the next one.